Welcome back to Keys of the Kingdom. So we're talking about being entangled again in the elements of the world. The dog returning to his vomit and the pig to his mire. And that's kind of us. Now, we might be not all as much pigs as we, you know, that I might suggest. And that's between you and God. You have to work that out. But the fact is, the state you're in, to some degree, has to do with your approach to life, your approach to the ways of Christ, to the gospel of Christ. Whether you even ever heard the word Christ or Jesus is insignificant, because you won't know the people by what they say, but by what they do. And what they do has to be the result of God writing upon their hearts and their minds, whatever you want to call that God, whatever name you want to apply to him, is really insignificant when you're talking about some sort of pronunciation out of your mouth. What tells me that you're listening to God is what you actually do because of what is written on your heart and your mind. Now, the individual that we've been talking about has been reading the Bible, and he's really sharp and knows a lot about what the Bible is. But you can see that he just has this blind spot where he doesn't see. And he just doesn't get it. And even unless you spell it out for him and prove it by, you know, reading the Bible and then showing this and this and this and this and this, he's not going to get it, because he's not really having God right upon his heart and upon his mind. And this is why he's doing exactly what Adam did, accusing someone else for his particular state and status today. It's somebody else's fault. It's not my fault. You know, I've been a father and a grandfather. I've heard it all from the back seat. He started it. You know? It's not my fault. Is she hit me first? Whatever. And we need to have introspection and look at ourselves and what we're doing or not doing. Because, see, it's not only your covetousness, but also your sloth. And now, I fully admit that, yea, his people, for lack of knowledge, you know, would have been free or would have been better off. And they lack knowledge. And so there is a place for knowledge, but you're not going to decide to follow God because you get knowledge. You have to be eating of the tree of life, and in other words, of the Holy Spirit, receiving the Holy Spirit, which will show you. When I wrote these books, you know, I wrote down what God was putting on my heart, and I realized much later that I left certain things out, like I said earlier in the show, or in this series, that I left certain things out. So I hear people echoing back what's written in the books, and that worries me. But when I see them putting, you know, connecting those dots and drawing the same picture that God is writing on my heart, then I know that person is a brother. A lot of people think that, oh, this is a brother because he's reciting words from the Bible that I also recite. That doesn't make you a brother. That just meant you read the same book. So it's very important that people put this together. And when they start putting it together, that's, you'll know them by the fruit of their dot connecting. So if their fruit looks like a porcupine, chances are it's not a pineapple. It's not the fruit of Christ. It's something else. And so anyway, you have to figure that out for yourselves, and I can't explain exactly how that works. Now, I mentioned that I sent off an email at the beginning of this particular show, and those of you who hear the show later, you're not going to know where this is, but it's a Ron Paul interview back in 1997. I think if you look up Warning Ron Paul 1997 and Google it on YouTube, you'll find several copies of it. And anyway, he's talking about the federal government has In it's a few minutes long, 7 minutes, I think, or something. He talks about the federal government has no jurisdiction to regulate. He talks about regulators eating out our substance in the states. He says they have no jurisdiction in the states, and he's talking about how they're all becoming armed, and, you know, there's 60,000 armed federal agents going around and eating out our substance. And, of course, the eating out our substance is taken from the Declaration of Independence. And you can see how Ron Paul would not be popular with the establishment by the things that he says. I mean, he probably thinks Kickstart is a good thing. So, but the fact is they do have jurisdiction. And this is one of the problems that goes back to Bundy and Finnegan and all these stuff, which I have nothing against the guys individually, but if you're not going to see the whole truth, you're not going to be able to put on the whole armor of God. And you need the whole armor of God in order to, you know, face this. Or you're going to end up like, what was it, Michael Hastings? Brilliant reporter, brave son of a gun, goes out there and reveals all kinds of stuff. He's working on the biggest story ever. He's a reporter for a Rolling Stone magazine, I believe it was. And suddenly, and they actually have video of his car going by an intersection. He goes zooming through an intersection in a straight line in his brand new car. And it explodes, blows the engine like 70 feet away behind him, and then hits a tree and bursts totally into flames, and he's killed. He had just sent emails. He had just contacted an attorney that he was fearing the government that was pursuing him and after him, and he was working on this biggest story ever, and he's a big one for revealing corruption. He was just fearless in this way, and then suddenly he dies. Well, now, of course, immediately the news says, well, of course, what did they call him? The aluminum hat conspiracy theory people are going to think that he was killed by the government because he was about to expose people in the government. So they're going to think that, you know, like somehow they took over his car or something. Well, the reality is, you know, Stanford professors have done this in these new cars with the computer controlled. Some of them, you know, like the cars who park themselves and everything, you can actually take over the steering. But taking over the acceleration of a car, there's nothing to it. You hack in and do it. There's lots of people who have done it. It's not a secret. I mean, it's just possible. And, you know, there's a lot of evidence surrounding this vehicle and this crash that the guy was killed. And to shut him up. And, of course, whatever story he was working on, he wasn't even sharing with his wife, who actually worked for Homeland Security. And she at first thought that this was, you know, that they killed him. But then suddenly she becomes terribly paranoid and says that, no, it was just an accident, and she doesn't want anybody looking into it, and et cetera, et cetera. And she fears. So if you don't think the fix is in sometimes, you're naive. All conspiracies are not, you know, theories. I mean, evolution is a theory. Very little facts, very poor science. I'm not sure exactly how we all got here. I don't agree with everything Ken Ham says. I think he's a great guy. He wanted to be on my show, according to one of his representatives. But I couldn't go along with some of the things that he would say. But I had all my kids reading his stuff when they were little. But I don't think he's 100% accurate. But so where's Ron Paul? Back to the subject. Where's Ron Paul inaccurate when he says the federal government has no jurisdiction within the states? Well, all the people living in the states are residents of the states, but citizens of the federal government. They are merchandise. They are surety for debt. They have been cursed by their parents, who have spent and spent and spent and wanted benefit at the expense of their neighbor. They were biting one another since back in 1930, back in 1910, when most of the people started going to public school. And they've been biting one another for a century now. And they have been devoured by the federal government. They are now surety merchandise owned by the federal government. Of course, the federal government is bankrupt, and so they're a surety for the debt of the federal government. And so foreign powers holding large numbers of Federal Reserve notes in international law have a right to come here and collect what they owe those foreign governments. And if they can't deliver on what they owe, they have a right to come with the military. And God can't help you when you cry out. That's what Samuel 8 is all about. Samuel 8 is telling you. I would encourage everybody to go read 1 Samuel 8. Because he's telling you. You know, so when did we stray? Well, there's a lot of different points, but we could at least point out that we strayed when we decided to elect a president. You know, most of the people in America were against the Constitution. They thought it was a mistake. Had it been put to a popular vote, it would have been voted down. It didn't at that time because they knew it was a mistake. Most of them thought it was a mistake, and they were right. I agree with them. It was a mistake. But a number of men thought they needed the Constitution they created, had no idea, in most cases, how far it would take the American people, although in some cases they warned us, which is why everybody should study the Anti-Federalist Papers, because there they tell you some of the dangers and pitfalls of what would be possibly happening in the Constitution. I mean, Patrick Henry said, who was against the Constitution, that this document was written as if good men will take office when bad men take office. You know, men who think that Kickstarter is a bad idea. they will steal your rights through ambuscade. And he was right, but they didn't really steal them. You sold yourselves. And, of course, Benjamin Franklin talked about this. For benefits, you were willing to bite your neighbor, and now you've been devoured in this huge, which is actually, you know, we have a chapter on this, the unrighteous mammon, the largest trust in the history of the world. You're bound up in that, and you can't get out. And it's a Corvey system, and your children are bound up in that, and you register your children because you don't hide them in the bulrushes like they did with Moses. You register their children, and they become dead to you as your children, and now they belong to the state. And we go through, this is why Jesus says, call no man on earth father. And we explain this. We show you the law at that time, the law in Rome, how it worked, how they were doing the exact same things you're doing today. In our articles on call no man father, on Rome versus us, we explain all this stuff. But the point is that you are in bondage. And they do have a right. And they are going to betray you and turn you over to foreign powers who will come in for a variety of reasons, which I won't go into now, which is prophesied in the Bible, both Old and New Testament warns you of this. But I don't want to frighten you, but everything will change eventually again, over and over again, and history will repeat itself. I want you to come together because you love one another. Because if you come together because you're afraid, those bonds won't hold in the face of what's coming. And of course, the people in Israel were crying out. They wanted to do what God wanted them to do. They wanted to stop coveting their neighbor's goods. They wanted to stop, learn what it meant to stop taking the straw, the benefits of Pharaoh, provide for themselves and continue to pay their tally of bricks. They were willing to do that in order to be free. Not all Israelites were willing to do that. And so many of them stayed behind. But many Egyptians said, we want a piece of that. We think that's good because God was writing on their hearts. So it wasn't just Israelites who left. Egyptians left with them to the tune of thousands. And this is, you know, that's in the Bible. You know, he goes on to say, this individual, he doesn't see the fact that Moses was teaching these people how to live according to the laws of God. I mean, the Ten Commandments are all contained in the Egyptians' laws of Maat, which I think there's like 67 laws of Maat, but some of those laws are, thou shalt not steal thy neighbor's horse, or thy neighbor's donkey, or thy neighbor's cow. And so they had 67. I mean, Moses was at least condensing it down to thou shalt not steal, period. He didn't have to list off all these different things. Although he did repeat one commandment seemingly twice, according to some determinations, is that you can't covet your neighbor's goods or anything that is your neighbor's, and you cannot covet your neighbor's wife. And we can go into that, and we have gone into that in other recordings. But coveting is very important. Just because it's last doesn't mean that it's not important. To Romans, the fact that it was last would make it actually the most important. Because they always put the most important thing last. So this coveting is very important, that they stop coveting, stop taking the benefits. And of course, the Pharaoh was absolutely go along with that, that they would not get his straw anymore, but they would still have to turn in bricks. So they had to work twice as hard, very clearly. And they did that. And they took care of one another. And some of the plagues didn't actually end in Goshen. You know, the hail didn't come in Goshen, but everything else was going on then. The shortages of food, everything was taking place. But the Israelites were faring well. How did they fare well? Now, he says in his letter, I've read the Bible many, many times, and I never saw what set the Israelites free from Egypt's bondage was their willingness to help one another and the Egyptians. Well, we see he says, surely you have should have little trouble. He's being sarcastic here, pointing out chapter and verse. Then, right, he says. So you can see he's being facetious. But really, the whole Bible points this out. You know, because the Ten Commandments existed long before the Ten Commandments. And it was just, you know, what we see is the Ten Commandments put down in that number of 10 items, thou shalt not, was just a reiteration of documents that had gone on long before. And I do believe that it was written by the hand of God in the heart of Moses and Joshua, who happened to be a stone cutter who was up on the mountain with them. Now, was it like fire coming out of the sky and carving these things into the stone tablets and all this stuff? That's Cecil B. DeMille's depiction of it. I don't know exactly how it took place, but I think the Ten Commandments are really key to understanding how to be a free people. I think most people don't understand the Ten Commandments, like the Sabbath thing, which has to do with debt. If you were Sabbath keepers, there would be no Federal Reserve existing in the United States today, because nobody would be operating with debt money. Because the Sabbath is all about working 6 days and taking your day of rest. Federal Reserve is all about taking your day of rest and then having to pay back for the time off that you took and the free things that you got. You know, your couch is bought on time, your house is bought on time, your children are, you go to the hospital and you pay for your children on time. So, but your all your money is debt. No, I mean, you're so far away from the kingdom now that you have to turn around. And this is what was happening in Egypt. And by those hard times, why did God harden the heart of the Pharaoh? Why didn't he said, let my people go? Then if God's God, why didn't he just say, okay, I told them to do this and, you know, I booming voice in the halls of Pharaoh, and Pharaoh says, okay, they can go. And the reality was that the Pharaoh wasn't even the rightful Pharaoh. Moses was the rightful Pharaoh. But Moses didn't take the people out with a military force. We're not going to take the people out with a military force either. That Jesus didn't take the people out of the bondage of Herod and his system of Corban by force. He got them to say, anybody who gets the baptism of Jesus Christ is cast out of our system. They were all opting out of their system that kept them in bondage in Judea and the rest of the Roman Empire, because Judea was tied to the Roman Empire as a city-state, as a city, you know, as a part of their Pax Romana. It wasn't conquered yet, but in a way it was conquered according to the ways of the Nicolaitans, which if you haven't read our article on that, you probably don't know what I'm talking about. So you have to go read that, because I'm not going to take the time to tell you now. Go find that out. We'll get into that maybe a little bit later. You're in this bondage because you were covetous and slothful. And the Israelites were in the bondage of Egypt because they were covetous of their brother, Joseph. And therefore, they ended up going into bondage. From generation to generation, they remained in bondage. So why would you think that God would lead them out of bondage? I mean, they were crying out, but were they changing? I mean, if you just whine loud enough, God's not going to save you. He's not going to bring the miracles that are going to set you free. Just as you whine a lot. You have to repent. You have to start thinking differently. It's very clear that the Israelites began to think differently. Otherwise, they wouldn't have lasted a week in the desert. I mean, you got people having to pack up everything. The old people, the young people, the sick people, everything. And leave Egypt and cross the desert. And now some people argue, oh, we don't even know that that happened. Well, there's all kinds of evidence that it happens. The chronology of the modern Egyptologist is incorrect. And there's a lot of people that have been going into that, but it's hard to get them to change their minds. But there, you know, there was a mass migration of a large number of people, especially from the area of Goshen, and they moved across some of the most inhospitable country in the world and became a thriving, wealthy, healthy society because they actually were following the ways of God, the prophets, and men who even like Plutarch and Polybius, as well as Jesus Christ, have been telling us for years. Modern Christians aren't following that way. They're following the ways of Nimrod. They all have benefactors who exercise authority, just like the Pharaoh, who gives them their straw, their health care, their welfare, their Social Security is welfare. Public schools is welfare. They're all socialist systems whereby men who exercise authority one over the other take from your neighbor, whether he's rich or poor, they take from him and provide you with benefits. That's what Egypt said. Well, you know, I will provide grain for you in hard times, but you belong to me. A portion of everything you make has to go to me. This is how you got into bondage. It wasn't a secret. They were telling you how to do it. There are people in America today that are exempt because they didn't go that way. It's a very small number of people. They have some other problems, but they didn't go that way. You have to change your thinking. If you can't see that coveting your neighbor's goods has made you merchandise, and you tell me that you've read the Bible several times, you're telling me that you got a serious problem with perception. Because Peter says it. Proverbs says it. Psalms says it. Jesus said it. John the Baptist says it in Matthew. How come you can't get it? Moses said it. Love thy neighbor as yourself. What do you think that looks like? Does that look like you sending swarms of officers to your neighbor's house and your residence and your neighbor's wife to force them to labor daily so that you can have benefits? Free? How in the heck is that Christian? How in the heck is that according to the Mosaic law? How is that according to the words of John the Baptist? How is that according to anything that is righteous. You can't see that whining wasn't why God sent Moses to help set these people free. It was the fact that they were beginning to think differently. And if you go into Philos, he's very specific. They were filling each other's water vases. Those vases were water purification deals they still use in that area, made of clay, fired at about 800 degrees, that you could pour water into, and water would drip out. It's like a Berkey water filter. And that water would drip out, and you could drink that water. And they knew how to make those because of the area that they were in. And they shared that water with Egyptians, which Egyptians said, this is why they loved them at the end, why they showered them with gifts, is because they were the faith emergency ministry auxiliary of Moses for the people, their own people, and for the Egyptians. If you're not building a network of people to be that faith emergency ministry auxiliary now, then you are not seeking the kingdom of God and his righteousness. You are not following Jesus Christ or the ways of the early church established by Jesus Christ. And that's why we created the network, so that you could join together and start taking care of one another and the stranger in your midst through faith, hope, and charity. And the way to do that, without binding yourself up into some sort of corporate church structure, is to freely assemble in small groups, like 10 families, what we call the tens, or they used to call the tunes, the tens, hundreds, and thousands. Small groups. Pick somebody who is the closest thing to the character of Christ, who actually shows up and does his job, which is to connect you with all the other congregations. And start helping one another out. Start helping people in your community. It is not going to be hard to find people who need help. But then you're going to have to learn how to help them in a loving way that strengthens them. And we'll talk more about that when we return to Keys of the Kingdom. Well, welcome back to Keys of the Kingdom. Well, during the break, I prepare what I might be talking about the next half, because I don't begin these shows knowing exactly what I'm going to be talking about. But I was just going over this individual's letter, which I didn't even read till this morning, but this is what I thought this would be a good jumping off place. Now, I sent to our network groups a couple of articles that really kind of explain a lot of this stuff. And also give you additional evidence, you know, concerning like the temples of Rome, which were all pagan temples, right? These temples of Rome were pagan temples, and of course Christ came preaching the wisdom of Christ and everything. But now there was a temple in Jerusalem too, and Jesus, the apostles were all impressed by it, and they were trying to show it off to Jesus, and he was evidently not very impressed by it. And once you start understanding that David started building the first stone temple, but then he put it off because David was a king after God's own heart. God never wanted us to build a stone temple. He doesn't want us to build a temple in Jerusalem now. And Jerusalem isn't even Jerusalem. Jerusalem is double peace. That's when peace is in your heart and in your mind. That's Jerusalem. When you're coming into peace with God in your heart and your mind, and when you're doing that, God will be able to write upon your heart and your mind and tell you where to go and where to be and what to do, and it may save you, but it may allow you to save others, which will save you even greater, because Jesus warned you, don't worry about those who can kill the body, but worry about those who kill the soul. And And our souls have been being strangled daily, not by the fraud of banksters, but by the covetousness and sloth of our own hearts. That's what strangles us spiritually. Because adversity actually can bring growth. You know, like I load a couple tons of hay every day. I pick it up, stack it up, pick it up, feed it out, pick it up, carry it over and feed it to other animals. So, I mean, I move sometimes the same bale three times the same day. And I'm an old man. But it keeps me fit. Fit is, I'm actually fitter than most young men. Although I'm beginning to feel that I'm an old man from time to time. But this guy goes on, you know, and I state that the Bible tells us that we will curse our children. And of course, they're sealed in this bondage. Now, they can't just write a letter and say, I want out. Because they're sealed in trillions of dollars of debt. Which is a part of one of the most unrighteous mammons. Once you understand that mammon, I said I'd talk a little bit more about it. Mammon is entrusted wealth. That's what mammon means, the original word mammon means. And you're entrusted. Your land is entrusted. Your children are entrusted as surety for debt, which the Bible talks about from the beginning to the end. Be not surety for debt. And this is the largest unrighteous mammon in the history of mankind that we know of. He goes on, and I said, there's no way out of this servitude. And he says, not necessarily. You are aware that the Icelandic, Iceland did to their bankers, he goes on. You can Google it. I'm aware of it. But, you know, I'm also, you know, aware of people in Iceland. Iceland is not free. They're not free souls under God. They did arrest bankers and everything, and it was very difficult, but they're very controlled economy. You can certainly try that if you want, but that is not going to solve the problem, because the people are still just as covetous of one another's benefits. Now, there was some noble things in that action in Iceland, just as there will be noble things during the economic collapse in the United States. But it's not going to be found where this fellow keeps looking, because he keeps looking to blame other people. And I go on to say, no one can honestly claim ignorance of the fact that all these government benefits provided to the people come by way of those who exercise authority one over the other. And his response is, of course they can. They can't honestly claim ignorance. He says he's educated himself, but the reality is everybody knows how public school is funded. If you're claiming ignorance, it's because you choose to be ignorant. You know it's funded because the government threatens to take away the home of everybody who lives in your county and state if they don't contribute on a regular basis, pay their property tax on a regular basis to the government. If you don't pay in on your federal income tax to the government that supposedly also offers federal funding for your local schools, just so that they can have control, federal control over your local schools. And we see that. They want to control the speed limit signs, everything. And they can, because they're funding it. You're sitting and eating with a ruler. And Americans have done so with great appetite. But we were told 3,000 years ago that such rulers serve deceitful meats, deceitful dainties. It's in the Bible that he says he's read several times. But his parents sat down and ate with rulers. I have little doubt that he went to public school. That doesn't take place you know, without having a cause and effect. I say there is no deception except the fact that we are self-deceived. We deceive ourselves in our own hearts and minds. We want to think that it's okay because it's the government. But if you go back and, like I said, everybody should go read Samuel 8. First Samuel 8. When they wanted to have a ruler who could exercise authority, it was called by God a rejection of him. It's not because they've rejected you, Samuel, but because they've already rejected me. So everybody who's looking for a political solution have already rejected God. Now, I know there's varying degrees of that, but basically you're thinking if we get the right king, ruler, then things will get okay. No, they won't. They won't get okay. For one thing, you won't get the right ruler because you've created an office of power. And God says, now explain to the people, and it's in this Bible, this book that mentions government 700 times and religion 5 times. It tells you that if you go this way, want to have this ruler who can exercise authority one over the other, this is what's going to happen. He's going to take and take and take and take and take and take and take. Whole chapter there of take and take and take and take and take. So where's the surprise? Where's the deception? You've been told this. He's read the Bible, he said multiple times. Where's the deception? Common sense will tell you. If you give, Jefferson told us, if you give a government the power to provide you everything you want, you're also giving them the power to take away everything you have. You know, I paraphrase that a little bit, but that's basically what he said. So, if you don't think that electing a leader is going to do this, now I know a lot of you want to go out there and elect a leader who's going to take less. And I commend you for that. But the fact is you're outnumbered. I mean, you're still thinking that you can go to the voting booth with the forces of Mulder and win the election. You've given the right to vote to goblins and whatever the other guys are there, and they outnumber you. And of course, you know, way back, I mean, you know, 2,000 years, 3,000 years ago, and writings about democracy, they tell you that this is what's, once the masses realize that they can vote themselves benefits out of the government coffer, the government is doomed. The nation is doomed. The society is doomed. And people have realized that. And they're open about it. And they're honest about it. And, you know, and we see the newsmen interviewing, you know, the different socialists, young, usually a lot of young people and everything. And they say, oh, yeah, that's great. We should take from the rich and give to the poor and everything. You know, that's not really what... that wasn't what Robin Hood was doing. He was taking from the tax collectors and giving to the poor. He didn't take from everybody who was rich. He took from the tax collectors who were abusively taking from the poor. But anyway, in the if you're on the network, which everybody should be on the network, and you should be on the network for the purposes of gathering together and forming that network of tens, and we're going to kind of make it a policy that if you volunteered as a personal contact, I heard an interesting statistic today. You know, there were thousands of employees by the BLM, and they have thousands of volunteers working for the BLM. Now, this was a story that was also, and it was on Facebook, and they mentioned that as a statistic, and then they said that they're going to show a video next, although it wasn't included on this little video on Facebook, of a meeting where BLM employees are laughing and joking about how they're stealing land by millions of acres from Americans and veterans, And they think it's funny and great, and they're getting applause. And it was secretly filmed. And, well, if you want to see the video, we have it up on our website. And I sent the link off so that people can go see it. And the fact is, this is what's going on behind the scenes. Because of a spirit flowing through the people where they think things like Kickstart is a bad thing and bigger, more powerful government is a good thing, which is why you see people, you know, I know people that are going to vote for Trump. And they think that's great. Of course, I know people that are going to vote for Bernie Sanders, and they think that's great. I tell you, it doesn't matter. Both of them, I can will take you down a road to destruction. Because both of them are a rejection of God. Because you're not doing it for yourself. You're not taking care of one another. You're still depending upon those farm fences to keep you safe. And you're not learning the ways of range sheep. You know, the range sheep could leave our place anytime they want out there on the desert. Because the fences don't go all the way around. It might be a little difficult in places, but the llama leaves. He walks away all the time. Comes back, but he walks away. The point is that you need to change your thinking. You need to repent. That's what repentance means. Change your thinking. And you don't realize, you can't just change this in your mind in 1 minute. You have to actually walk the walk. And one of the ways to walk the walk is to start gathering together. Do not forsake the gathering together, the coming together, the assembling of yourselves together in free assemblies where you remain volunteers all the time. If the BLM can get thousands and thousands of volunteers, why can't we get thousands of volunteers to pursue the ways of Christ, the ways of Moses, the ways of Abraham, which is the ways of free will offerings to take care of all the needs of your society, all the welfare of your society. Now, you don't even know how to do that yet. You know, if you guys all came together like the sheep on the range, yeah, you wouldn't do it the same way they did it. And you should see them when they do it. Maybe I'll video that and show you how it does it all. I'll get a border collie to dress up like a coyote. And you'll see how they gather together. This fellow, I say some feel the sting of the whip and the bite of their masters and are beginning to wake up. They cry out. I go on to explain, but they don't know what to do. If people want to deny the truth, they often claim that this modern bondage is not their fault, but the result of some sort of fraud. And it's not. The only fraud is that you're not really a Christian and you keep claiming to be one. Or you're not really a Jew. I mean, if you're a Jew, you're following Moses. If you'd follow Moses, you'd be halfway to Christ. But if you're not even going to follow Moses, you know, I mean, look at Israel. They're not following Moses. I mean, most of them as a nation, as a government, as the Zionists, they're not following Moses. They have heavy progressive income tax, which is usury. They've had iron coin for decades and decades and decades, which is not just weights and measures. They're a socialist nation, so they do covet their neighbor's goods. So they're not even keeping the Ten Commandments. Now, there are some great people there, just as there are great people in America and great people in Canada and great people in Australia that may not be far from the kingdom. I'm not interested in governments. I'm not interested in government politics. I'm interested in what is moral and right. The evils of tyranny are rarely seen but by him who resists it. Well, this was John Hay said this back in 1872. And it's not really true. The evils of tyranny. What is that? He thinks the evils of tyranny is feeling that whip, feeling that pain, feeling that oppression. And you don't feel it until you resist against it, and then they give you a good smack. But the evils of tyranny is being a tyrant. That's the evil of tyranny, because that kills the soul. So the evil of tyranny is the fact that you are forcing your neighbor to contribute to your welfare by applying for benefits from men who call themselves benefactors but exercise authority. And at the same time you're doing this, you're claiming to be a Christian, a follower of Christ. That's fraud. There's your fraud. You're not really a following Christ because he said it wasn't to be that way with you. You weren't to be like the governments of the Gentiles who call themselves benefactors but exercise authority one over the other. It's not to be that way with you. But it is that way with you. He says, when he appoints the kingdom to the apostles, which is the church, he was telling him, you must provide the benefaction of your society, those benefits of society, the Eucharist of society, through faith, hope, and charity, and that perfect law of liberty, through love. You know, when Jesus said it, they translate it love. When Paul says it, they translate it charity. Same word. If you're not doing that, if you don't have a daily ministration to take care of the needy of your society, unspotted by the world, which is the constitutional order and systems of government you have created for yourself, which are taking and taking and taking and taking. If you can't do that for your congregation, you ain't there yet. But of course, that's why he says seek it. That's what you should be seeking. And that's why you should be gathering together, forming these tens, hundreds, and thousands, gathering together. I can't do it for you. I can't say, okay, you 10 guys, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, you guys get together. Okay, you 10 guys, you get together. And then I appoint, okay, this will be your leader. You have to do this yourself. And this is why we created the email network. So you can get to meet these people, get to know them, and gather together. But if you're going to be like this guy who wants to blame, you know, fraud and deception, and it's the government's fault, and not look at your sloth, your covetousness. Now, this guy doesn't take a lot of benefits from the world, from what I understand. I don't know all the details. I don't know if he took care of his parents. I think his parents are dead. He was living in the home that him and his brother inherited, and he has some dispute with his brother, and it gets all complicated. But the point is that, I mean, his parents got those benefits. They didn't want to see it. And this is what was prophesied, that people wouldn't see it. And they lack knowledge. Now, I know out there are many of you, I've run across people who haven't got a clue about what I'm talking about. But in their hearts, I see them say things, oh, I'll never apply for Social Security. And they don't want to send their kids to public school. They want to teach them themselves. They don't want to be on unemployment. If they lose their job, and people say, well, you can go down and get unemployment. They don't want to do it. They find another job. If they lose, you know, they have expenses that they weren't expecting, they sell stuff. They cut their, you know, back. They don't want to be a burden to anybody. But occasionally people need help. Well, all those people have those traits of what we call kingdom tracks. They should be gathering together. Not just to help one another out, though, because they have to be the Samaritans of the world, the faith emergency ministry auxiliary to the world. That is where the miracle is going. Because it doesn't work if you just love one another. You have to love those who don't love you. This is what grace have you if you do not love those? If you only love those who love you, what grace have you? And you're going to need that grace. Because that's where the miracles come from. You need to change. It's not just not taking benefits. You have to become the benefit of your society. That means you're going to have to do a little overtime. Just like the Israelites who had to pay their tally of bricks. But then they had to start taking care of one another with that extra burden. And that strengthened, that adversity strengthened them. It taught them how to come together. And the sheep out in the field, when they face the bobcats and the coyotes, and now evidently wolves from Canada brought in by the federal government and brought them into our midst and are running around and have evidently killed sheep and are now mating up in our area. It's going to make the sheep stronger. We're already making preparations to provide greater and greater protection, both for our sheep, and our sheep are learning to provide and work together more efficiently. And so that adversity is making us stronger. The problem is, if adversity comes too quickly, and it will come quickly, most of you are ill-prepared. That's why you need to start gathering together now in real congregations, real free assemblies, bound by nothing but love of the way of Christ. And then as you go, you will learn to love one another, not just in your local congregation, but in your congregations of congregations. Your ministers will congregate together and form this natural but invisible network, another important aspect, that is only operating according to the Spirit of Christ. If you're not doing that, if you're just sitting around reading the Bible and boasting about how you know how wicked they are, instead of realizing how wicked you have been, how slothful you have been, then how is there going to be any salvation for you? How can there be any grace for you? This is why Jesus focuses so much on forgiveness and giving, because this is how it works. There is no actionable fraud. He goes on, he insists that there is. There really isn't actionable fraud that's going to set you free. The fraud you need to see is the fraud that you have perpetrated upon your own hearts and thinking that you got it already. You must realize you didn't see. And then God will give you vision to see. And you will need that. Until then, may peace be upon your house. And may God be with you. God bless.
You have been listening to The Keys of the Kingdom with Brother Gregory of His Holy Church. For more information on the educational ministry provided by His Holy Church and Brother Gregory, including services, counseling, lectures, books, and other audio materials, please write to His Church at Summer Lake, Box 10, Summer Lake, Oregon, 97640. You can also find us on the web at www.hisholychurch.net.